B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
I'm just a real jerk.
That's John Cooper from Skillet, who is the furthest thing away from a real jerk. He's up first in the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Had a great conversation with John. We talked about all sorts of things revolving around Skillet, revolving around bass players, even revolving around touring. He says more people should do it.
I kind of feel like if everybody in America could come on tour for a year, this world will be a better place.
We talk about the new record, Victorious, taking his kids on tour. He also tells me who he thinks is the best touring band out there.
Every night I watch him and say, this is just the baddest band I've ever seen.
You'll just have to listen up to find out which band John was talking about. Up next, it's another John. This one, John Zazula, otherwise known as Johnny Z. He's releasing his book on October 29th called Heavy Tales, The Metal, The Music, The Madness. It details never before told story of how Johnny founded legendary New Jersey based label Megaforce Records with his wife Marcia. As John puts it, it's somewhat of a quick read.
It's a fun read. It's great for the toilet, man. You sit down, you can knock it off. There in about four sittings, you'll kill the bug.
We talk a lot about classic metal bands, including the scene that was happening in Southern California, or perhaps the scene that wasn't happening.
Well, the actual reality was there was no movement that truly understood them in L.A.
Right.
They didn't get it in L.A. And the hair bands, the metal scene, that crew scene, and whatever was going on was what was going on.
John Cooper from Skillet and Johnny Z, John Zazula, today on the Talkin' Rock podcast.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Hey, thank you as always for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Another two for one today. As, man, this whole week we've had two guests on each podcast. Starting off with Tom Kiefer from Cinderella, and of course doing his own solo stuff now. And Joe Elliott from Def Leppard, also with this band called The Down and Outs, which is a complete different band than Def Leppard. I mean, it has a real 70s classic rock feel. That was earlier this week. And then the last podcast, Steve Gorman, the drummer from the Black Crowes, he wrote this killer book. And I'll tell you what, man, he is not afraid to dish on the Black Crowes and the trials and tribulations they had. And he was a great guest, real candid. He was on the last podcast along with guitar virtuoso Bumblefoot, also from Guns N' Roses, from Sons of Apollo. Just a real funny guy, awesome entertainer, and just a super good dude. So if you get a chance, go back and check out those guys. In the meantime, this two for one, John Zazula is up second. The Heavy Tales, I should say the book Heavy Tales, The Metal, The Music, The Madness, about his Jersey-based label Megaforce Records. That comes up here in a few minutes. But first off, it's John Cooper. If you get a chance to check out Skillet when they come to a town near you, by all means, do it. I forgot how energetic and just how powerful this show is. There's all sorts of stuff to check out with this show. It's just a great live band. Jen on the drums just bangs so hard. She reminds me of Haley Kramer from the band Pop Evil. But she sings a lot of the backing vocals and some of the vocals as well. So, I mean, just she's an all-around performer too. But John is just a great entertainer up there on stage. I had a chance to sit down with him before they took to the stage this past weekend. Here in Detroit, and John is just a real nice guy. Check this interview out and see what you think. If you like this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, write a review, share it with your friends, and as always, thanks for checking it out. All right, backstage here at the Fillmore with one of the most difficult guys to talk to in this business, yep. John Cooper. How are you, John?
Good. I'm just a real jerk.
That's what I've heard. That's what everyone says.
Yeah, it's
no, seriously, one of the nicest guys in this business, and really happy always to see Skillet come through the Motor City. So how's things been going on this tour?
Good. It's great to be here, man. I love coming back, and I've been excited about seeing you and chatting with you, and we're having a good time. I think we're 2 or 3 weeks in to the tour and having a great time.
How are the Alter Bridge guys treating you?
Oh, good. Yeah. And we've known each other for quite a while. We actually opened up for Creed when Creed was doing one of their comeback tours. I feel like it was you know, 2010 or 11.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
Around that time, yeah. And got to know the band, and they treated us really well on that tour. And we've been lucky enough to have done some gigs with them in Europe and whatnot. And this is our first tour with Alter Bridge. Mm-hmm. So it's cool to be back and doing it. And they're great guys.
Did you see, have you seen the Netflix movie Between Two Ferns yet?
No.
Oh, where the one girl from Creed is in there, and Zach Galifianakis asks her, "What's Scott Stapp like?"
No, I haven't seen it.
That's a pretty funny line in the movie, anyways.
Right? No, I haven't seen it.
definitely worth watching if you get a chance.
Yeah, yeah. You see, I always brag on Alter Bridge by saying we toured with Creed and they treated us really good. I don't know if they like me saying that or not. They might be like, "Dude, stop saying that."
No.
I mean it as a compliment because they treated us really well on that tour. And so it's really cool to be back with friends. Yeah.
I remember, not to get off on a tangent, but Mark Tremonti may be the only guy to ever call me on the request line at a radio station. I was doing this thing on the radio around 1999. And you remember their feud with Limp Bizkit?
No, I don't.
They had a feud with Limp Bizkit, and I was doing a song. I was doing Corrosion of Conformity versus Limp Bizkit that night. And my intern says, "Hey, some guy named Mark Tremonti's on the phone. He wants to vote for Corrosion of Conformity." And so I pick up the phone, and I go, "How do I know it's you?" He goes, "We were playing ping pong last night." I go, "Oh, yeah, it is you." So,
oh, my gosh. It's just that's awesome.
So, no, they're really good guys. So what do you think of this Dirty Honey band? I haven't seen them yet.
Yeah, we've been out for a few weeks now, and... you know, it's throwback rock, you know,
yeah.
So it's kind of got to me, it sounds like if Jackal and Danger Danger had a child.
Ah, okay. Yeah, because we're trying to figure out who they sound like, and we're singing like Tesla or something, but
a little bit of a Tesla, a little bit of Slaughter, a little bit of Jackal.
They do a chainsaw?
There's no chainsaw. More's the pity. Because, you know, I remember when Jackal came out, you know, see, some of the people listening now are like, "What are they talking about?" But if you were there, you remember, you know.
I was the first guy in the country to play that song.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I'm to blame.
I love the thought of you coming down on me. I love the heat of love.
Well, this interview has taken a turn for the worse.
I sing the whole song. I love that crap when I was growing up, man. Oh, that hair metal stuff. Yeah, I really liked Ugly Kid Joe when they first came out, too.
Yep, I saw those guys. I played them when they first came out, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Ricky Rackman came to the local bar, and they did a thing for Headbangers Ball, and they were playing that night. So
awesome.
And my brother and his bandmates were all standing in line to get in the bar, and MTV went down the down the line, and I told him, I said, "You could say your band's been on MTV."
I wish I could have been there, yeah. So I could have said that.
Now you grew up in Memphis, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, because I keep seeing a Memphis band, but you guys are pretty much in Milwaukee now, right?
Yeah, you know, we started in Memphis, but I'm the only one from Memphis.
Okay.
And now we have members really from everywhere.
Right.
So now we do live in Wisconsin. And my wife, Corey, who plays guitar, she's from Wisconsin. So I'm married. So she's not here doing the interview because she's watching the Packer game.
Oh.
So I broke from the Packer game to come up here to talk to Meltdown.
Well, thank you.
You're way more important.
I appreciate that. We'll try not to let you down.
But you're not more important to Corey.
Okay.
But you are to me, okay?
I'll remember when I see her later.
But we're crushing right now. We're crushing the Cowboys, so it's all good.
Okay, yeah, that's awesome. Well, speaking of crushing, you guys are crushing as well. New records out. I'm watching WWE the other day, and there's your song, and I'm like, I mean, how much of a push is that?
Oh, it's awesome. You know, WWE's been really good to us. In fact, you rewind 10 years, 10 years now, when our song Monster first came out.
Right.
WWE was the first outlet to pick up Monster really before it really hit radio. So I owe them a lot because I don't think I'd be here still if Monster hadn't been around. So, and when we found out this was happening, it was really cool. It's also cool for me because I love wrestling. So it's, to me, like wrestling and sports and rock music, like all those things kind of go together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the dude thing. You know? So I've been a wrestling fan ever since I was a kid. So it's a great look.
And now, like you have kids and stuff. So what do they think of that when they see that? You know, man, it's got to be...
Oh, they think it's really cool, you know. And my kids are nice, so they're just, like, really happy for dad.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool, dad, you know. But it's nothing quite like seeing last week when Raw started and, you know, they have, like, all the explosions and all the pyro and my song was playing. I was like, yeah. I tweeted Instagram, Facebook, anything, Snapchat, anything else. Are there any more left? I don't know. Any other thing I can do?
I saw it on your social media, too, and I think they played Legendary as bump music in a football game.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I posted that crap, too.
I was thinking to myself as I saw that. I'm like, man, you know, it's cool to see someone that gets excited about their stuff being used. Like like Howard and I met Jeff Gute last week from, you know, Stone Temple Pilots, who I've known, but Howard's never met him. And he was so excited that Sisto Rodriguez from the Sugar Man movie was backstage. Remember that? It was like so cool that he was like really excited. Right. So you guys get just as excited when they use your stuff.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's an element of it, I suppose, that is like not very cool if you're geeking out about your own song being used. You know, like you're kind of like you're supposed to play it cool. Like Johnny Depp would never tweet and be like, just saw myself on a TV commercial. You know, you'd be like, right. What a loser. But I don't know. I think I'm like, you know what?
You know what? I think that shows cool. Your real side to people.
That this is me being authentically me. I freak out when I heard my song on WWE. I yeah. Can't believe they choose my song over someone else's, and they did, so I want to publicize it.
For sure. And how old are your kids now?
16 and 14.
All right, so they're getting to that age. Like I told my son the other day, I'm like, I just talked to David Lee Roth. He's like, I don't care. So so your kids are probably getting to that stage now too, but they've seen a lot, and you've had a chance to really expose them to a lot as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's a cool thing about being on the road is that you, especially growing up on the road, you learn to get along with all sorts of different people and realize I kind of feel like if everybody in America could come on tour for a year, this world would be a better place, because you have to get along with people that don't agree with you about politics, religion, philosophy, music. You meet all sorts of different people and you realize that for the most part, we're all kind of the same. We just might disagree about religion mm-hmm. or about who to vote for, but everything else in our lives are pretty much similar. And so my kids have had this great thing of growing up with people with tattoos all over them and crazy hair. And, you know, I think it's really good for them, actually. So because of that, they can talk to anybody about anything and just raise our kids to be nice to people. That'll change the world. Here's the John Cooper tweet for the day. Be nice to folks.
That's right.
That's it. Be nice to folks, man.
Well, you guys really are, like I say, one of the nicest people out there. And it's funny you mention that, because I think I was on a cruise a couple years ago, and at the end of the cruise, there was they always have the comedy section. And of course, all the adults go there, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And this guy said one time, he goes, hey, look, whatever happens in the country, look at how all of us got along all weekend. You know, no one had any issues. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like what you're talking about.
It is. That's right. I'm sure not everybody on the cruise believes the same stuff.
Right. But they all got along.
Eats the same food, but they... It's hard to be mad when you're on a cruise.
Well, that's for sure. And probably hard to be mad when you're on tour.
yeah, you have your moments. But, you know, man, going on a cruise right now sounds pretty good. We're right before this, we toured with Seven Dust and Pop Evil, and then we came straight to this, and now in 3 weeks, I'll be in Europe for 6 weeks. So right now, going on a cruise is not going to happen, but that sounds pretty good, man.
Yeah, there you go. So the record's been out for a couple months now. Tell me, like, what was your goal going in making this record? What was, like, your mission, maybe even your message going into making this record?
You know, what I really wanted to do different this time, maybe not everybody listening knows how records are made, but typically it's like you go on the road and maybe you get ideas for songs or whatever, and then it's time to record a record. So then you take 6 months off, you go and you record an album. Well, I always get inspired by meeting fans, because I hear all these stories. You know, people come through and they're like, dude, I was out in Afghanistan in the army. Your album got me through the crap over there. And they tell me these stories, and then I get inspired, and
right.
I write a song, and then I have to wait 2 years to record that song, but I'm not living in the emotion anymore, right? Mm. So I said, what if we carry around a recording rig 24/7? Every show we play, we have the ability to record. And then when I meet that guy that tells me that story about being in Afghanistan or whatever it is, if I get inspired, I can write it and I can record it tomorrow and I can finish the recording later, but I get the vocals down. Like I get the passion of what I'm feeling.
And at that moment.
In the moment, yeah. Because that's when it means the most to you, you know?
Wow.
So we decided to record this whole record on the road. Now, we did go to Milwaukee and do some overdubs. You got to make drums sound better,
sure, yeah.
And things. But the guts of the record and the vocals were all, the whole thing was recorded in dressing rooms like this one, or the bus, or hotel rooms, and because that's what I was feeling. So that was a really cool vibe.
Wow.
Because to me, it was all about the fans. It was about their stories.
Did you ever, like, take the stage late because you were trying to get a vocal down?
Oh, man. I, I'm extremely on time. like they said in Spinal Tap, you know, remember when Spinal was like, I was impressed by their punctuality.
Punctuality, right.
We are a very punctual band.
The raw energy and the punctuality, yeah.
That is us, but there were multiple times when I'm like, if I do not get ready, I'm not going to make this show. And it's really, it is actually hard to unplug from like recording to going on stage because your mind is in a whole new place, you know.
Let me ask you about this with the Signal Legendary. So Godsmack has a song out, Be Legend, whatever it is. And Pop Evil has it out. Do you ever think about the words?
Definitely.
I mean,
Think about not writing a song that someone else has written already?
It seems like there's a lot of legends
I'm getting meltdown in here. You know, that was when I heard Pop Evils, I was really annoying because I wrote Legendary before our last record came out. I'd written a song called Legendary and it ended up not making the record, but I loved the lyric and in the end I didn't love the chorus, so I held it, rewrote the chorus, and I was like, I bet this could be our first single. The next thing I know, I'm here listening to the radio and I hear Be Legendary. I'm like, what the crap?
Yeah, when legends rise, that's a Godsmack song. Yeah.
So that kind of thing can definitely happen. I think especially with the fact that culture is so trend-driven now. You have things that are like driven by like, for instance, a word can be like, you know, so 2015,
yeah,
you know, and or something like that, and that tends to happen more now than it used to because trends happen and themes. So I was quite annoyed in a joking way.
Right,
I was annoyed
with
Pop Evil because they're my friends and I love this song, but I was like, you know what, I wrote it already, we're gonna do it anyway. So here we go.
But you know what I'm saying, because I think I was talking to Matt Dorito one time and he's like, you got to watch some of these keywords, like if there's like a lot of songs out with the word angry in it at a certain time, you got to watch what you do with that.
It's crazy because that'll tend to happen and it can all happen at one time. But there's still sometimes I'll hear a song and I'm like, man, that's kind of a recycled lyric from something else, but if it's a hit, it's a hit. It's still got the play, you know, but it happens.
No, well, hey, it's on WWE.
It's on WWE, and if you don't believe me, check any of my social media accounts.
So have you done any songs since the record came out on this tour, like you were talking about? Have you put any ideas down?
I've not written anything. In fact, I told my wife, me and Corey, we wrote the whole record and produced the whole record ourselves. We produced most of the record ourselves. But I told her when we got this record, I was like, I cannot write anything else for like...
Were you drained? I was
drained. Because it wasn't just that. Skillet's been busy for 2 years because we actually wrote and recorded a project for our drummer, Jen.
Yeah.
She has her own EP out called Ledger. And so we were writing a Skillet record, and then we paused the Skillet album to write and record the Ledger project that came out. And then, as you might know, I released a side project called Fight the Fury. That was me and my guitar player Seth. We started this side project, metal project. So I released a 5-song EP with Fight the Fury, and then went directly from that to finishing recording the Skillet album. And while we were doing all of that, we also wrote a graphic novel called Eden that released.
Yeah.
So it has been like 2 years of just like nonstop, you know.
You're trying to like creativity. Take Nikki Sixx's job over. He does everything too.
Yeah. There's those people, Sixx and Corey Taylor.
Right.
There's those people that do everything, and I kind of ended up becoming one of those people, and it's quite a lot of work.
Well, I talked to a lot of people. Like, I just talked to Tom Kiefer the other day. I'm talking to Joe Elliott coming up, who's also doing a side project and stuff. What are some of the challenges of, getting away from Skillet and doing your side project? Or is it just a way to like explore other avenues and just do something that is not in Skillet's wheelhouse?
I think the latter. You know, it was fun. It was like, okay, this stuff is a little too heavy for Skillet. It's a little too screamy. It's more the metal side and the prog side that I really like that isn't really necessarily something the Skillet fans love. They like the heavy stuff, but maybe not the prog and metal side so much. And so I thought, you know, that'd be really cool to do something. It'd be fun. Give the fans something else to listen to. And that's pretty much what I listen to. I listen to music much harder than I play. And so I thought that'd be really cool, you know, do a project that could play with Slipknot and, you know, Korn and whoever else. So it was a great amount of fun. it was more work than I thought it was going to be, especially for the fact that we were producing so much other music.
Now, speaking of that, so are you producing and writing with other people now, too? Other projects?
I don't usually, besides Ledger, okay. I have not, really. No.
I thought that you were working with some other people.
You know, I've done a little bit here and there. I have to admit that I don't love it. Some people really like it, and I do get asked by people, but I've just found that I don't know why.
Maybe you just got to drive in your lane.
I feel like I'm driving in my own lane. I feel like, you know what, with Skillet, I've kind of done, it's managed to work. But I don't know if I'd be a guy to go into any room and just start writing and throwing out great stuff for everybody.
Yeah, because you want to keep that for yourself.
Because I'm selfish. Because I'm a selfish jerk. I don't know if it's because of that. I just don't know if I'm good at it. I'm not really sure if I'm really good at it or if I really care enough. Mm-hmm. I get so busy doing so many things that I've just gone, you know, stay in my lane, write for Skillet, help Jen, our drummer, Jen. Her project's fantastic. In any way that I can help her, I would like to, you know? So that's kind of what I'm focusing on.
Now, you mentioned prog rock a second ago. Now, you're a Chris Squire fan, aren't you?
From Yes?
Yeah.
Did I
read that?
Oh, yeah. He's my favorite bass player.
God, I'll tell you, I just recently got back into Yes after getting into vinyl the last couple of years. And, like, even this morning, I was listening to Fragile. It's just, like, it's so great. Good.
Yeah, that Fragile's on my top 10 of all time. Yes is my favorite band of all time. And Chris Squire is my favorite bass player. It's just so you hear that bass and you know it's him.
Yeah.
It's got that great, like, Rickenbacker, like, you know, tone to it. And it's funny because he's a fantastic bass player. It's also funny because Skillet is not much of a prog band and I'm not much of a prog bass player, but that actually is my favorite band.
Now, did you ever have a chance to meet him?
No.
Okay. No. So I just did a blog the other day, my top three bass players, and I had Chris Squire, I had Steve Harris, and Geezer Butler. And those were like my top three.
Who's Geezer Butler from?
Black Sabbath.
Okay.
You might have heard of them.
Yes.
They put out a couple records.
Yeah, I was about to say, I know I'm supposed to remember who it's from. I can't, of course, Black Sabbath.
So who would you put here?
Mine would be Doug Pinnick from King's X.
Oh, that's right, Doug Pinnick. Yeah, great bass
player. He would be my number two.
Yeah. Plus, he's got the harmonies, and the band's so good.
And he's a singer.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot of singer bass players.
And he is tall. I just saw him. He's like 66 years old.
Oh, yeah.
I just saw him. And the guy is unbelievable.
Oh, he's sick, honestly. Yeah. King's X is one of those bands that that every band loves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They never really became an A-list act. Mm-hmm. But all the bands think they should have. You
right.
know?
There's a few of them like Seven Dust and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, Seven Dust obviously has been extremely successful, but Seven Dust is more to me like a modern King's X.
Right.
They've got that great prog thing. They're all amazing musicians. Seven Dust is ridiculous. When we toured with them, I would go out and watch them every night like, oh my gosh.
You got to bring your A game when they're playing.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what else I'm a really big fan of? I love bragging about Fieldy. Well, Korn in general.
Oh, yeah, Fieldy, yeah.
And I just think that they are the, I would say the best, in my opinion, best living live rock band in the world.
Really?
Yeah. I think Korn is amazing. We toured together, I think, was it last summer or the year before? I'm getting my years confused.
Yeah.
I mean, every night I would watch them and say, this is just the baddest band I've ever seen. And Fieldy, I like his little, like, you know, the clicky click.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's called the Fieldy click. He's got that great sound to it. And it was really unique when it came out. Kind of funky, but heavy, you know. So whatever that is, he does really well. He's on my list.
Yeah, Dave Ellefson's a friend, and his tone and his bass is so great. From Megadeth, you know, and I mean Flea. I mean, we can just go on and on about great bass players. I just interviewed Geddy Lee a little while ago. What an honor that was! And
well,
he's got that
funny,
big, beautiful book of bass. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's awesome! It's like this big. It's like 12 pounds
of
bass.
Geddy Lee. I mean, here's the thing about bass player. I'm a singer bass player, but there aren't very many of us, but most of us, and I'm taking myself out of the group, are known for being amazing, right? You got Primus.
Right, yeah.
You've got Rush, King's X, who we already mentioned.
Lemmy.
Exactly, Lemmy. Yeah, if you're going to play bass and sing, you're typically, like, amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not amazing like they am. I'm good. But sometimes people go, you don't even play bass in all your songs live. I'm like, yeah, it's because I'm good, and I'm not insecure. I don't have to play bass on every song because I can handle myself. I'm no Geddy Lee, but I can hold my own. But typically, bass players, Sting's actually a fantastic bass player. Mm-hmm. But you know who else is a wicked bass player? To me, because he's such a rock star, is Nikki Sixx. I actually have no idea how good of a bass player Nikki Sixx is or not, because it's not like, that's not what Motley Crue is about.
Right.
They're not about like slamming bass. They're about hit songs and being rock star. And every one of Motley Crue was like their own like little person, their own character almost.
Yeah, it's funny because you talk about that back in the 80s stuff, before the internet and stuff, you knew who every guy in Motley Crue was.
That's right.
And it's like sometimes there's some bands out there. I mean, look, you're the face of Skillet. I mean, you're on the record and the whole thing, you know? But, you know, some of your bandmates may be a little more faceless, even in today with the social media. Isn't that strange how that works?
It is strange. You know, I don't know when that changed. I mean, in my opinion, since we're talking and having so much fun and being very candid, some of that changed because of the bands, because they were faceless. Hey, I said it. In the 90s, it was just like, don't put me on magazines. I'm not a rock star. I'm like, yes, you are. You're Pearl Jam. You sold like 10 million records. You're a rock star now, whether you like it or not. And I'm dying to know more about. But a lot of the bands were like, I don't want to be seen, which I think partially gave rise to Gavin Rossdale being like the king of the world in the 90s, because he was like the first singer that wanted to be on a cover again. Mm. Remember how great looking?
That's interesting.
He's so great looking. He was like, yeah, I'm a rock star. I'll take my shirt off and do the, you know, he was like bringing it back. So some of the bands didn't want to be that, and they just kind of became, to me, rock and roll stars were supposed to be larger than life. They were supposed to be Van Halen, you know, David Lee Roth.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to be all these people just like you, Nikki Sixx. Dude, if I had Instagram when I was growing up, I would never have left my phone so I could know what Tommy Lee and Nikki Sixx were up to every day.
No,
it probably would not have been PG.
Right, right.
But it would have been nice to know, you know, what's Ozzy up to? Let me check my Instagram. You know?
No, but it's right, because there are some bands now that I know they're friends of mine, and we walk through the crowd at their own shows. They don't even get recognized.
Weird.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Maybe, so I don't really know why that would be, but some of it probably is the ubiquitous of everything because of the social media. It's almost like everything is so out there that you don't notice anybody.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean by that?
There's so much going on. Yeah, there's a lot of noise.
So much noise that there is no noise, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what, the Dirty Honey just took the stage here, so we'll cut you loose, a couple more things here. So you got this run, you said you're going to Europe and stuff. You got anything lined up for 2020?
We're working on something now. Nothing I can announce, but we are going to be touring America again and probably overseas again. And just want people to check out the record. The record's Victorious. I'm sorry. The name of the record is Victorious. And
it's going to be Victorious.
It's Victorious.
But now there's probably going to be three bands coming out with Victorious records.
Yeah, probably.
Notorious,
yes.
like Duran Duran.
There probably will be. I'll be like, I did it first. No, so check out the record. Come check out Skillet on tour, and hopefully people love the album.
John, it's always great to see you. And I don't know if you heard about this, but Van Halen's finished.
I heard about it on Rolling Stone. Oh, no, it was you. It was on Meltdown.
Oh, never mind.
No, I hope it's not the case.
I hope so, too. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. But David Lee Roth, in my opinion, is the number one greatest rock frontman of all time.
I was going to say, do you think he'd be the number one guy?
In my opinion, he is. He's larger than life, like, just, you have to be half crazy to act the way he acted in the late 70s, early 80s. You have to be a maniac to get on stage and do that stuff.
Yeah, give me a couple more guys that you look up to as far as from.
If I'm going iconic rock, Steven Tyler has to be, you know, on the list. If I'm going more current, Jacoby.
Yeah, Jacoby's great.
From Papa Roach, one of my favorite people in the industry. On a personal level as well.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But on stage, I think he's the best. Brent Shinedown, one of my good friends, and Brent just has that a little bit more like a timeless frontman vibe to him. You know, he kind of commands the stage. I would say between Brent and Jacoby, probably my favorites of the modern age.
I was just talking with somebody, Dave Grohl.
Right.
Goes up on stage for like 2.5-3 hours. It's like,
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing people can do that. Like, the Boss is like that too, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm like, how do they do this for that long? So there's tons of great ones.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can sit here and talk bass players or front men all night long. I know you got a show to do, and we appreciate all the time you've given us.
Oh, I love chatting with you. We talk music and we talked comics before this thing started.
I'm a little bit over my head on that, but you're probably more suited for that. So
over my head. I hear music.
That's
over
right.
My
yeah.
Head.
All right, King's X. All right, before we go on any further, hey, thanks, Sean. We really appreciate it.
You got it, man.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Up next, we switch Johns. John Zazula, otherwise known as Johnny Z. Like I said before, Heavy Tales, the metal, the music, the madness comes out on October 29th. Check out this. If you're a fan of the early thrash metal and just heavy music in general, I think you're going to dig this conversation. It's Johnny Z on Talkin' Rock. Good to talk to you. I guess you got a really interesting story. And first of all, I guess the first thing I want to ask you about, I'm just winging this as I'm starting here, is how does Detroit play into the rock and roll scene as far as what you've done in your life? Any of it?
Detroit was amazing. I was there many times. Unfortunately, I had to deal with hoppos in my life, but I also have seen the inside of the Cobalt Theater. What was it? The Cobalt?
Yeah, Cobalt Hall, yeah.
Cobalt State Theater, I believe, is there.
Yep.
Detroit, those were the venues in my time. You know, the biggest any of my bands got while I was doing my thing was Cobo Hall. And we'd go next door and see the wrestling, you know? my two of my children live just 30 minutes away. So they'll probably hear this when you play it.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, so it's funny because I can't tell you the amount of bands I've seen on stage live at you know, DT, which was Pine Knob, and at, you know, whatever arena. Then they mention harpos. Every band that's played harpos has to mention it for some reason. So,
well, it was a crazy experience.
Yeah.
You know, for some people it was... hopefully, let's get out of here alive.
That is true, yeah. I've heard all the stories. So you got this book coming out here, and it's called Heavy Tales. So tell everybody what this book pretty much entails and why you decided to write now. And before you start that, you're retired now, right?
I am definitely retired now, a year and a half about.
So in that time, did you have time to write this book, and why release this book and tell us a little bit about it?
Well, Meltdown, it took me a year and 3 months to write the book, and it took the editors about 3 months to figure out my language and put it together for me to make sure I wasn't so illiterate that it embarrassed me to death. But the book is basically in my voice. In fact, it's totally in my voice, and it tells the story of life before we discovered Metallica in 1982. It talks about the building of Megaforce Records, the discovery of Anthrax and Testament and Overkill, and how Ace Frehley came to be with us for his solo career. It just goes on and on and on to King's X and onward and beyond. And it's an interesting story because you're basically talking about a person who had less than nothing who managed to do this job. A lot of people thought it was a miracle, and we were putting out 7 classic albums in a year. But anyway, that's just part of what the book's about. You know, it's a fun read. It's great for the toilet, man. You sit down, you can knock it off. There in about 4 sittings, you'll kill the bug. And that's what it is. I call it Johnny Z's bathroom reader.
So for every Metallica that's out there, of course you hit a home run, obviously, with Metallica. Some would say a grand slam, so to speak. But how many foul balls did you hit in your career?
I hit enough to bat only 500.
Okay. That's not bad. So
for every success we had... We had a failure. It wasn't really our fault, the failure. We usually A&R'd some great, great music, but it was ahead of its time. or for one reason or the other, the label we were involved with, because we were always attached to a major label, just wanted us to put out our signature thrash and then give the love that the band needed to succeed. And we lost a few rounds that way, unfortunately. But we had many grand slams. You know, Ministry was a grand slam when we managed them. Anthrax turned out to be a grand slam. Metallica was beyond grand slam, you know. Ace Frehley, by the way, was a grand slam. So, and now Testament, look at them. And Overkill, look at them. Everybody's still working.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think they're working on a new record. So Metallica, this thing just came out in Forbes or something just the other day about, I mean, how massive this machine is and how many tickets they've sold and stuff. I mean, when you globbed on to Metallica, and you've probably heard this question a billion times, but I mean, could you foresee them being so huge?
You know, I foresaw them playing like the Isle of Wight with my imagination of what it was like when Jimi Hendrix played the Isle of Wight, because that's where my head was at in 1983. I didn't see the massive stadium tours and all that in the United States, but I felt they would rise to Madison Square Garden and beyond in my grasp of what kind of venues were out there in the little time that I was in the business. You know, I always thought they were going to be grand. I don't think I would have done what I did unless I thought they were going to be the greatest thing since white bread, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Early on in their career, I grew up in Buffalo, and it was early on in their career. They played a show in Buffalo, and everyone in the venue got snowed in, including the band. And there may have been 300 or 500 people or whatever, but I think I've met about 5,000 people that were there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course. Woodstock, you know, everybody was there.
That's right. What are your thoughts about the heavy music of today? Are you involved in it at all? I mean, do you get into any of it?
Well, I get into some of it. You know, I like voices really coming at me. I hate when people are screaming and yelling at me. And I feel that the vocals that have become so common today are not really my taste. However, there are certain vocalists in the growling business that have great melody to their voice, and the bands have all evolved into these mutant players. One such band for me is Arch Enemy. I talk about where I go. That band blows me away. I don't know why, but I think they're just great. Maybe that's the reason. There's a band in France I've been listening to called Arcania. Amazing band. I try to get them signed, but just like everything I ever tried to get signed, it falls on deaf ears until they're the biggest thing in the world because somebody did discover them, you know. And The Absence, which has Joe Concepcion, if you know him, he plays in Sanctuary and Arch Enemy, and the band also has the drummer from Venom Inc., etc. The Absence. These are like the three bands that I've been just listening to, and of course I listen to a lot of old school Meltdown. I can't help but put on Raven or Ramble or some Metallica once in a while. Testament all the time, you know. I listen to my old stuff. I loved it then. I love it now.
Now, I got back into records. I just got one of the Testament records there. I mean, do you have all these on vinyl still?
No. What happened was I moved to Florida from Pennsylvania about 4 years ago, and I had what I called the garage sale from hell. Prior to the garage sale, I sold about 7,000 of my albums. I kept behind many of my metal classics, and they went one at a time in the 3-week garage sale.
Wow.
And basically, except for like Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, Melissa's, you know, By Merciful Fate. Most of the records I have are no longer with me. And what I have three of for my three girls. So they could have a legacy of catalog from me. And that's what I have buried away somewhere. I don't even know where.
So So like I have a rock room at my house with pictures of rock stars and different, you know, stuff I've collected over the years and that. You said you just moved to Florida and stuff, but do you have certain things that you still have, like, I don't know, gold records, pictures, whatever? You got all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I have I call it our cave because it's Marsha and mine. You know, Marsha, my wife, has been my partner for 40 years, business and life. Full of gold records. It's a massive wall. It's full of gold records and trophies and awards and toys and the original Not Man head that was worn in Antisocial by Ozzy Osbourne. I have that and the little Not Man head that was worn by John Tempesta running all over this place in the stadium being filmed. You know, there's all kinds of things I have.
Now, I think I saw that you're talking about when Anthrax toured with Ozzy around 86.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that tour in New York. Yeah, that was great.
Yes, that was quite a tour, and I never told in my book the story about that tour, but there was quite a lot to tell. Maybe volume two, I'll talk about that tour.
Speaking of that, did you see the dirt? Because they did talk about some stuff with the Ozzy tour a couple years previous. Have you seen that movie about Motley?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think?
I thought it was cool. I thought it was fun. You know, it was a world that, thank God, I didn't involve myself in that much. You know,
yeah.
It's very hard to deal with that.
Yeah, you were on the opposite end of the spectrum. So Metallica, they actually wanted what was it? They were trying to play. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just like thinking about this off the top of my head. But those guys really wanted to head to Metallica, but Cliff Burton kind of brought them to the middle of the state in California, didn't he?
Well, I don't really know. What are you saying?
Well, I think that they wanted Cliff Burton so bad, but he didn't want to move down to Los Angeles and with all the glam and the hair bands.
Well, the actual reality was there was no movement that truly understood them in L.A.
Right.
They didn't get it in L.A. And the hair bands, the metal scene, that crew scene and whatever was going on was what was going on in L.A. The thrash scene was coming out of the Bay Area.
Right.
And that's where they went and were accepted immediately because the Bay Area got it right away.
Yeah, I always heard that that was kind of because of Cliff. Like they wanted Cliff in the band, but he didn't want to go down there, so they had to come to him. That's, I guess, what I was saying.
That was part of it. But the other three quarters of the story is if they didn't go up to El Cerrito and play in the Bay Area, things would have been very different.
Right. Now, I'm assuming you still talk with the guys from Metallica, James Nett, eh?
We don't talk like chums, best friends, et cetera, while they're touring and doing what they do. But if they're in the area, I'd like to go by and see them and reminisce and give each other hugs, you know? But it's not a, like, hey, James, how you doing? Hey, Kirk, let's get together and go to movies. You know, there's nothing like that. And it's not like that with anybody. The only, like, major, major friend that has been with me through thick and thin is Chuck Billy from Testament.
Mm.
You know, we're like thick as thieves and very dear friends of each other's.
I remember doing a thing with Chuck back in 1992 or so where he actually performed in a listener's living room back in Buffalo with the band.
Unbelievable.
I have pictures of that day for sure with Chuck and I in this guy's living room in Buffalo somewhere. I don't even know where it was.
The band wasn't with him, were they?
Yeah, it was the whole band. They went and did like a couple acoustic songs.
Holy crap. Unbelievable. Yeah, I could see that happening. I've done a few crazy things like that in my life.
Like what?
I took Anthrax. We had a European contest, and a band won in Holland in the town of Hilversum in this little village. And we went and played in their garage, the entire band with all the gear and PA. We played for the town. Everybody came out. They had cakes and all kinds of stuff to feed us when we got there. But it was amazing. It was a great show. About 150 people were there.
I know Scott and Frank. I'll have to ask him about that next time I see him.
Yeah, they play Little Town of Hilversum in somebody's garage.
Wow, that's great. So you're down there in Florida. Are you like with all the retirees and stuff that worked there their whole life at some menial job, and you're out there, you know, with your gold records and your just vault full of stories from a rock and roll past, eh?
Well, basically, everybody comes to Florida to die, you know.
But you
know, I'm not in a senior place at all. I'm in a pretty upbeat neighborhood. Everybody's kind of driving around in golf carts and being crazy, and I just sit in the back and listen to music of my house and kick back and just really, I listen to music 24 hours a day unless I'm sleeping.
Now, the book comes out at the end of October. You got some cool things coming up. You got some Q&As in that in New York City and stuff as well, right?
Right. I'm going to be in the Cutting Room in New York City on October 24th at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock doors open, 7 o'clock. And on the 26th, I have an in-store in Ford, New Jersey at Vintage Vinyl, which is an amazing, amazing vinyl place. And I'll be there from 2 o'clock to maybe 5. It's going to be packed. And there's been massive appearances and interviews, so I guess there's too much John Z going on right now. But you hear my voice everywhere in the country at any time. The way big.
Hey, that's okay. You got a lot of good stuff to tell. So the book comes out, like I said, it's called Heavy Tales, The Metal, The Music, The Madness. And this is really a behind-the-scenes look at how Megaforce started, and even some tales, I'm assuming, about some of the bands like The Overkill and Ace Frehley, Metallica, Anthrax, just like you said, right?
It's all in there. It's a very fast read. I heard from the people who have read it already, you can't put it down, and you just read right through it. Every chapter takes you to the next chapter. One thing I want to say on a national level, excuse me, my voice is going, the book is only available online.
Okay.
It's only Barnes & Noble's, Amazon, and at johnzazula.com. It's not for retail in stores. I wanted people to know that. All right?
All right. Well, listen, Johnny, it's awesome talking to you. I can't wait to check out this book. I grew up in the 80s through all this stuff, and I'm looking forward to checking out some of the tales from behind the scenes and whatnot. And good luck with everything.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, Meltdown.
Johnny Z, thanks, man. Next time you're in Detroit, look me up. We'll hang out.
All right. I'll be there soon.
You got it, brother. Thanks for the time. Good luck.
Good luck. Thank you. Bye now.
See you, man. Johnny Z today on the Talkin' Rockwood Meltdown podcast. Really interesting. That book, by the way, comes out at the end of October here. I mean, Metallica, Anthrax, Merciful Fate, Overkill, Stormtroopers of Death. I mean, just all sorts of great bands. Ace Frehley, even King's X, we touched on with John Cooper there at the end of his interview. Hey, if you like this podcast, give it a 5-star rating. Like I said in the beginning, write a review on Apple, iTunes, the whole thing. Share it with your friends. Subscribe as well, because that's how we kind of build this whole thing up, and we're closing in on 1 year of the moniker Talkin' Rock, so it's kind of cool. We've done, I think this is the 89th episode in the last year, so we give you a lot of content every single week, so check back. I've got some more coming up next week right here on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.